Spring, is that you? Warmer temps mean new Allbirds styles. Meet the new Superlight Collection, the lightest ever shoes from Allbirds, now in fresh colors. These must-have travel shoes have a lighter-than-air feel and barely-there fit that made them the most packable shoes ever. Plus, they're comfy right out of the box. That means more comfort and less baggage. Experience how Allbirds is redefining comfort. Visit Allbirds.com and use code SUPER24 for a free pair of socks with a purchase of $48 or more. That's ALLBIRDS.com, code SUPER24.
Louise Cooney's Open Book, a Go Loud original podcast.
Go loud! Go loud!
Hi guys, you're very welcome back to the Open Book podcast, where each week we host honest conversations with well-known personalities through the lens of a passion for reading. Today we have Aveen Garrahy, who is launching her brand new poetry book, Every Day is a Fresh Beginning. We talk about managing family life and work, the changing dynamic of relationships, and how she keeps herself grounded. Aveen Garrahy is an actress, a voiceover artist, an entrepreneur, and a social media influencer, so she's busy. She graduated with a BA in acting from Trinity in 2009, and she became well known for her work in Fair City, The Fall, and on-stage productions at the Gate Theatre. In recent years, she co-founded the lifestyle brand Bio, and she lives in County Clare with her husband John and three daughters. Aveen, you're very welcome to Open Book Podcast. Thanks so much for joining today. I'm so happy to have you.
I'm absolutely thrilled to be here, Louise.
I know you have a very busy day of book promotion today. You've just launched your new poetry book, Every Day is a Fresh Beginning, Meaningful Poems for Life. I started reading it the other day and I could not put it down. It's so gorgeous. There's so many, some poems I recognise and some I had never heard of, and they're just beautiful. I also didn't know that, like, you write poems as well.
Well, I wouldn't say that now, but I felt like because my name was on the front of it, I needed to put pen to paper. And actually, like, however simple they are, certainly there have been moments in my life where I have felt compelled to write. And, you know, singer-songwriters say that all the time, that, you know, the feelings get too big and they just need to, I guess, offload. And that's like leaving our first home was one of those moments that kind of caught me off guard. And we had been building up for this day and, you know, we're so excited about the new build and moving into our forever home and our family and all of that. But leaving behind our house, it was an incredibly sentimental moment. I thought, oh my God, I didn't expect this. And yeah, that was one of them. It's called number 32 and it's in the book. But yeah, I'm not a poet. Like, my dad, I would say, is. He left school at 16 and, you know, certainly didn't go to college or you know, do a degree in English. Mm-hmm. But he is a dab hand at putting pen to paper. Yeah. And I think, maybe there's a bit of him in me. I remember from a very early age, he would always write poems about us. We could always expect one on Valentine's Day. He's ever the romantic. But he used to write poems about us as babies. He wrote a poem for me and John on our wedding day that I recited at our wedding. But the funniest one was when I was only like a few months old and I was sitting in the buggy on a sunny summer's day and was going through the whole cycle of pushing out a number two. And he wrote on the back of a cigarette box about the process and the nappy changing cycle. It's still sits proudly in my mum and dad's downstairs loo. It didn't make the anthology now, needless to say, but from a very early age, he was writing poems about us.
So. Maybe book number two.
Yeah.
But I'm so excited to have you here because I know poetry is just such a love of yours. I think especially during lockdown, you rediscovered that. And we were just chatting before this about how, I suppose, during lockdown, it allowed you to go back to basics. And that's when I got back into reading again. Yeah. Do you read much yourself?
Yeah. Like, I mean, for me growing up, we were a family, I suppose, of extroverts in that we loved performance and we loved storytelling.
No way.
And now, I don't think I am. I'm probably the shyest of all of us.
Yeah.
But that element of performance. So like books like Ross O'Carroll Kelly, and you know, Paul Howard writes phonetically, so like the words literally, like they're written in the accents. Mm-hmm. I remember we used to get such a kick out of reading the different characters, the Sorka and the, you know, and we had such fun with it. But even before that, the puppets, and I remember Anne and Barry growing up, like they were the school books, but we used to have the puppets of them, and that used to just bring the stories to life. So it was, yes, for sure, we loved books, but we loved storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. And would you have like a favorite genre of books?
Like, I mean, as I've moved through my life, it has changed, mm-hmm. radically changed. Now, I mean, it's the self-help and it's the parenting. We'll get into that a little bit later on. But I think, you know, throughout my college years, and I was really immersed in what I was doing, and that was actor training in Trinity, and that was 3 years of like indulgence in theatre and in playwriting. And so, like, I don't think I ever left college without grabbing a play and bringing it, you know, in my bag on the bus on the way home, and it used to shorten the commute for me. And I have like shelves and shelves of plays. And I used to love, I found them easier to digest than, you know, the big novels.
Oh, okay.
And loved, you know, loved kind of immersing myself in playwriting. So for me, it would be, yeah, plays rather than books.
Yes, know? Yeah.
And then, of course, the poetry books. Now, they're my go-to.
Yes. I have a couple of quick-fire questions for you before we get started.
Yeah.
Paperback, hardback, or Kindle?
Hardback, I think.
Hardback, yeah. Gorgeous. Like, this is like a total coffee table book, I think.
Well, it feels old world. And for me, like, you know, that'll never date, you know. And it stands the test of time as well, you know.
I can see the answer to this one. Dog ear or bookmark?
Bookmark.
Oh, really?
Well, that's because I didn't have one to hand and we were kind of running around today.
Yes,
But no, it's usually bookmark because, old school. Again, it's for the aesthetics of it all.
Of course, yeah. Do you savour or devour?
I savour, I think. Mm. Yeah, I savour. And I guess, yeah, now with time and kids, it's just trying to carve it out, you know, a few minutes here and a few minutes there. And when they go down in the evening, like just those few minutes, that's all it ever is.
And who can you read like a book?
Ooh, I think probably my sisters, you know, both of them. I mean, I know what they're feeling from a blue tick in a WhatsApp.
Yes, of course.
If you get an instant response, you know, okay, it's great. If there's a bit of a linger, you know, oh God, I've said the wrong thing or whatever.
Or if you get a K. Yeah. Grand. Yeah.
Or an emoji. You know, it's, I mean, I can literally, from the smallest of interactions, you can tell exactly what they're thinking.
I know. And sometimes you can just be busy. You could, like, it could mean nothing, but you know the language.
No, there's always time to get back if you need to. Mm-hmm. Like.
So what is your first memory of books?
Yeah, I think I probably just mentioned that, and that's the Anne and Barry. Like, yeah, Mom and Dad were busy, you know, they were busy, and that's not to say they didn't give us time. They certainly did. We used to have lovely holidays and we used to have, you know, lovely downtime when they could. But in terms of the evenings, Mom and Dad had their own business. So, you know, they were working, and when they weren't working at the office, they were working at home. So, like, you know, that time for stories, bedtime stories, I don't have vivid memories of that. They'll kill me now for saying this. But I certainly do remember books at school and being like, it stems back to teachers, and like, I think your relationship with different subjects, like your teachers can be the biggest influence. Mm-hmm. And you know, whether you have a good or bad one can make or break that relationship. And I had incredible teachers at school. In junior infants, I'll never forget Mrs. Kelly and her puppets. But then when it came to like even English and poetry, I had a teacher, Susan Ryan, who literally used to make the words lift off the page. She introduced a poem that was 14 verses. It was called Flannan Isle. And we were only maybe making our communion. And she sent this home in the copybooks, and the parents used to think she was mad. They said, you can't teach a child of this age, a 14-verse poem. But she did, and she managed to get us all off book and reciting it because of the way she animated it and made it lift off the page. I remember there was a line, it was about a neglected lighthouse off the West Coast, and one of the lines was, and an over-toppled chair. And she picked up the stool at the top of the class and fired it across the classroom. And our eyes were out in stalks, but we just thought it was the coolest thing ever, you know, because she just used to, she was so theatrical. And she's kind of etched in my heart, you know, because that was my first, I guess, introduction to literature.
Yeah.
And then great teachers after that, you know, Maeve O'Donoghue was my speech and drama teacher, and she honed that love of drama, of words, the delivery of stories. And then in college, I had a teacher, a voice coach, Andrea Ainsworth from the Abbey Theatre. And she's the voice coach there. But we were so lucky that she used to take a class every week with us. And we just indulged, you know, laboured over every syllable and vowel and consonant when it came to Shakespearean sonnets or whatever that might be. Mm-hmm. And just to have that time. And then, of course, you leave, the bubble is burst and you're kind of, you know, the reality of a jobbing actor hits you straight in the face. But yeah, that time was heaven for me, really. Like, you know, just that indulgence, that, like, you know.
Teachers, immerse yourself. I don't think they realise the impression they have on people. Yeah. My sister's a teacher and I just admire her so much. Yeah. There's so much you just said that I'm like, remember this, to bring this up in a second. There's so much I can relate to. I also did speech and drama in school and I loved it. Yeah. And I know you teach speech and drama now, don't you?
Yeah, I did. COVID pulled the rug out from under us. Yeah. And then, of course, having kids, then it
it's busy.
So I did. I had my own drama school, Actors and Reactors, for 10 years in Clare. And yeah, then when you kind of take on the role of teacher yourself, you see it from a whole other lens, I suppose, and you're making the discoveries again through their eyes. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it reminded me that a lot of the themes, no matter what age, are universal.
Absolutely, you know? Like, I look back to school and going through books and picking out themes, and I do that now for my book club. I'm like, that's what's going on here, you know? That's what authors are doing when they're writing books.
Yeah.
But another thing you mentioned just is that, you know, your parents were quite busy. I'm sure that's something you can relate to now, because you run your own businesses. You have Bio, you have your books now. You're so busy, and, you know, John is very busy as well. He's got the hotel. So, like, how do you... I actually noted as well, you have a poem in here called... Mama put the phone away.
I know, that hit me like a bloody freight train. It was, Maria Tempany's poem, and the guilt, like, and she speaks about it in the poem. And there is that guilt, you know, and it's happened. The girls have done it to me. They're like, Mom, no, like, put it down. And yeah, like, I mean, we have to constantly check ourselves and remind ourselves. And that thing on Instagram, that voiceover, that... I mean, all summer long, it used to haunt me. You have kids for 4 years and then they're gone. And I was like, no, it's 4 in June and then it's over, you know, and then they're gone. No, they're not, of course, but like small kids. Sorry.
I know what you mean.
Kids for 4 years. Yeah. Oh my God. And, you know, and it's just, you have to remind yourself that. And I suppose, talking about books, what are my go-tos at the moment? Like, they're the parenting ones. And there's one... it's called Raising Girls. What's the author's name? Steve Budoff. And I have it beside the bed. When I'm having those days where I'm like, oh my God, I'm failing here. I am, you know, really failing. I pick it up and it's just a reminder, and it's a great reminder. But it's no hard, like, they don't come with a manual, but those little books that kind of get you back on track. Some of the lines in his, like, he talks all about nature and getting them out when you can. You know, and that's the biggest healer, and they're different kids. You know, when you pull them away from the screens or whatever, the TV, and bring them out in the fresh air. I mean, it's the old tricks, like, you know, they sleep better, form is better. But yeah, I think, you know, it's no harm. Look, it's common sense ultimately, and going with your gut, but no harm to have those little reminders.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've Cooper, my little dog, and I even find it hard to get out with him for 45 minutes a day because it's busy, and it's like there's so many things pulling on you. So fair play to you for managing it all.
I don't know.
In the story of your life, what would you say what book has been your biggest teacher?
It's a great question. I think, again, at different points in my life, I remember Mom had a book. It was called Questions Children Ask. I remember coming to her sixth class, and we were coming up to that birds and the bees chat at school. And I don't know how, but I had never heard about sex. Like, I just hadn't, you know, and maybe, I don't know, it was an innocence, but it was sixth class and I still hadn't heard. I mean, the word is thrown, but you don't ever question it.
You don't know what it is, yeah.
But she had this great book. I can't remember the name of the author. And she took it out and we sat down and we went through it, and it was a very open, and Dad was kind of hovering, like, he didn't engage her because, you know, it's a daughter, and but he was there, he was present, and I felt his presence.
Fair play to him. More than most people would do, I think.
But we went through it, and like, I could have given a lecture on it for a finish, and I felt so equipped then, you know, and I felt like no one was going to, you know, tell me otherwise. I knew, you know, the way of the world. And I was shocked, to be honest.
That it wasn't a stork?
Completely shocked.
Yeah.
But I remember it being such an eye-opener. But it was just the approach in the book and then the way that Mom kind of guided me through it. Questions, and I think it's still on shelves. I've seen it. Questions children ask. And there's kind of different chapters for different stages.
Okay, so it's not all birds and the bees.
No.
Okay.
No, no. Oh, no. It's the hard-hitting facts. And particularly at the age that, you know, Mom produced it, I was ready to take it on. And
Did you share it with Alva and Duran?
I'm sure she did the same with them. Have we had? No, I don't. I'm sure she, like, no, I certainly didn't.
So
no,
I have two sisters as well. Grace is like a year and a half older than me, and she had the book before me. So when my friends would come over, I'd be like, I know where it is. Come on, we'll go and have a look at it.
Was it the same book?
Or no, it was more of a book. Just Birds and the Bees book, like a biology book almost. But we just thought it was so funny, like, you know.
No, this was very sacred. Like, it was a sacred moment.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that kind of, it started that relationship, I suppose, with Mom specifically, where like nothing was off the table. Like, and, you know, when I had boyfriends then down the line and felt like I needed, you know, contraception, Mom marched me in, you know, to the doctor.
Wow.
We had that open, honest, you know, relationship that I felt like I could tell her anything.
Oh,
and
my
I
God,
suppose
that's so good.
Problem shared is a problem halved. And if I can, you know, adopt anything in terms of parenting for Mom and Dad, it's that, just to, you know, to keep everything open, you know,
and
keep the lines of communication there.
Do you feel that with your kids already, that they already have things that they would turn to you?
I feel like they're hiding stuff already, you know.
Really?
They're testing boundaries all the time, and I'd see Nora like has stashed, like, you know, a little, like, she finds treats in the present, they're stashed in behind cushions, and you have to tell me, you know, if you ask me, it'll
like
be
it's
fun.
No problem if you tell me.
Yeah, or coins, you know, so innocent, little copper coins, like she's robbed from, you know, I don't know, the jar or whatever in the kitchen, and I'm just like, you know, we need to talk about these things, there's no problem.
But I suppose you have to do that from like
it's a bit of divilment, and that's fine too. But I think, yeah, just keep all lines of communication open as much as possible, because it is true. I mean, as soon as you share it, there's a weight off.
Yes, absolutely. In the story of your life, what's been the biggest plot twist?
I never thought I'd end up countrified. Like, I never thought I'd end up in the West.
Do you know what? I remember when I heard that you lived down in Clare a couple of years ago, I was like, really? I thought she was from Dublin. Because I'm from Limerick.
Yeah.
So it's my neck of the woods, and my parents have a house now in Spanish Point. And I'm so jealous of you living down there, because the pace of life is like something else.
Yeah. And I find that a lot of people are reassessing things now. Mm. And I think COVID helped a lot of people to kind of ask those questions. You know, what am I sitting in 2 hours of traffic for? And what am I, you know, when we can get a little bit more, you know, adaptable, I suppose. No, but it, for me at the time, you know, pre-COVID, and you know, and it, my line of work was not, you know, conducive to Zooming all the time. You know,
yes,
I have to be there. It was a big decision. Now, it was something that happened kind of over time, and it happened organically. And, you know, it wasn't just one day I said, right, I'm up, I'm gone, you know. It was like living out of suitcases when I could carve out the time to be with John and whatever. And, you know, in between jobs. And again, it was, you know, the nature of my work. You know, I might have been doing a show like with the Gate or touring or whatever for, you know, a 2 month stint, and then I was off for a few weeks of whatever, or I had a stint in Fair City, a storyline, and then maybe they gave me 3 weeks off and I could. So I was kind of dipping my toe in the water for a while. And then I just had to, I suppose, be honest with myself. And I certainly, it's a shift in gear. And yes, it's a slower pace. And I had to figure out how I could make it work for me. And things were slowing down in terms of work. And that didn't sit well with me. You know, that I wanted to be busy. And, you know, that's my makeup. And I come from a family of entrepreneurs, I suppose. And, you know, there was an itch there that I certainly wanted to scratch in terms of business and you know, seeing the fruits of my labor, you know, putting the time and energy into something and then seeing it bloom. Whereas, you know, with acting, you could do every course under the sun, and you could upskill, and, you know, you can keep training, you keep reading and going to the theater and, you know, and meeting the right people, and still it's subjective, and still you mightn't be someone's cup of tea, and still it just might not happen. And
sometimes it's about luck, isn't
it? It's luck, timing, being in the right place at the right time, you know. And I found that exhausting. I really did. And it started to chip away at my confidence, I suppose, to a certain extent, but also, you know, I was just like, what's this all for? Like, you know, and when you're defined by what you do and you're not doing that thing, it can get exhausting. It was draining. And I wasn't depressed, but I definitely felt, you know, low at times.
You didn't have like that sense of purpose or fulfillment.
No.
Yeah,
no.
I get that. Because yeah. It's kind of similar, I guess, in what I do.
Yeah, because it's, yeah, for sure. For sure. That like, you know, it's up and down and, yeah. You know, there's good days and bad days.
Yes.
And,
yeah.
And there's busy spells and there's quieter spells and, you know, you're in and out of Vogue and all of that. So I suppose you build a thick skin and you pick yourself up, you dust yourself off. But it was my dad really who said, like, you know, why are you pigeonholing yourself? You're X, but you can also be Y. You know, you don't have to put yourself into, you know, one particular box.
Mm-hmm.
Try it out. See how it goes. And yeah, like I loved Dublin. I was very much like involved in the industry I was in. I was, you know, every night was a night in the theatre. If I wasn't mm-hmm. working, I was going to see plays. I was immersing myself in it. And then to just decide, you know what, I've had enough. Yeah, it was mad. And like Ennis now is home and it doesn't feel like the culture shock it did initially. But for sure at the time I was like, what is this? Where mm-hmm. am I? What am mm-hmm. I doing? Initially. But now, like seeing the girls and what's on our doorstep and time in the outdoors.
Oh,
and,
for kids, it's an amazing
yeah,
you know, way to
lovely
live.
Upling. Yeah, it really is.
Just speaking on what you just said, the poem All Along You Were Blooming, I had seen this, as you said, like on Instagram and
yeah,
all.
Yeah.
And I always save these things. I call them quotes, but it kind of only dawned on me when I read your book, like a lot of what I save is poetry.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of why I like it so much. And
yeah,
but this poem is amazing. I feel like I read a little
yes,
bit of it, but I feel
do.
Like I should let you
no
read it.
Please do. Okay. Please do.
I'm definitely not going to be as good at it. And the thing about blooming is nothing about the process is easy. It requires every part of you to stretch upward with your roots firmly planted in the ground, and in the sun and in the rain and in the wind you stand anyway, even against the pull of the soil. And through it all, one day you will see all along you were transforming. This took everything out of you, but the struggle was beautiful and necessary for your growth.
It's gorgeous, isn't
like,
it?
I feel like that's so true with when you're kind of moving careers. And I can relate to that now as well, because I've just started, you know, have my Clue Active business and I have
yeah.
the wine spritzer and I'm just pulled in a million different directions.
Well, during lockdown, you were, I mean, everything turned on its head
yes.
for you.
Yes.
You found your, I mean, you were in New York, you were carving mm-hmm. out this life.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're back at home
in Limerick. And you know what? It was such a nice time to reflect like that. Like reading this really brought me back to that, because I had so much time to read and just sit and drink coffee slowly and not be sitting in traffic. Like life has suddenly gone back to that crazy
yeah.
pace again.
Yeah.
But it's about right. Okay, what did I learn during lockdown?
Yeah.
To say no sometimes, to
yeah.
to live a little bit more simply. So I'm trying to do that, but it's yeah. it's hard. Like,
and to trust in divine timing. And
mm-hmm.
like, I mean, our careers are marathons. They're not sprints.
Yeah.
And you know, when you're younger and particularly in your 20s, you want everything to happen instantaneously. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't always work out that
mm-hmm.
way. And there's a bit of growth, you know, to be done in the process, for sure. I love Morgan Harper Nichols, her Instagram page, if anyone is looking for a page to follow. Like, she shares stuff like that on a daily basis.
Okay, I'm going to go follow her after this.
She's one to note.
Have you got a favourite poem in this book?
I do. And one of the questions on your lovely list was the greatest story never told.
Mm-hmm.
Before that was the greatest story ever told. And these two link. I love The Notebook by Nicholas Sparks.
Oh.
You know, that's just, it's such a beautiful book.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a beautiful movie. The actors in it are two of my favourites. That for me is just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful story. When I picked up this poem, this falls under the heading Never Told, but I suppose Steve has told it in this poem, but it's relatively undiscovered, and it reminds me of the story of The Notebook. Just a maturing love and two people who've been through the mill. I'll read it and then we can have a chat about it afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
It's called A Poem From My Father to My Mother by Steve Denehan. Remember when we met? When I was a kite? When you were the wind, when Dublin was dance hall days, foggy nights, what ifs and maybes. Remember when I fell into myself, how you forgave me and forgive me still. Remember Bert Bacharach in the hotel lobby when you exclaimed, it's him. Remember how we used to dance, how the room spun with us. This guy is in love with you. Remember when you said yes. Remember those funhouse mirror years, when you remained a childless mother. Remember the worry in your voice when you threw the word into the air, not knowing if I would catch it. Adoption. Remember how I was the fool who should have held you more. Remember how they grew in our arms, on our laps, how they left, but never leave. Remember when months became decades and we forgave ourselves for getting old. Remember before I started to forget. Remember when we ran across the dawn, or wanted to, at least.
Literally, look at my eyes. I am having an emotional day. It's so nice.
Isn't it just gorgeous? Steve, I saw it in the Irish Times, this poem, during lockdown. And he's the most unassuming guy, but it's the story of his mom and dad. And it's just gorgeous.
He adopted?
So I think maybe they, I don't know the ins and outs. He's actually coming to the book launch tonight.
Oh my
so
God,
I'm going to ask him about it. Because I don't know, did they have a baby and they put the baby up for adoption and then had Steve and his siblings? Or if they adopted all their kids. I don't know.
But I love that, like, it leaves you
open. It leaves it open. Yeah. But, like,
just the maturing love.
The maturing love.
I read this one the other night and I was like, oh my God, that's gorgeous.
Yeah, before he started.
And even what we just spoke about there with your kids, when you said you 4 years of them and then they leave. But they don't leave, you know.
Yeah, like, totally. Yeah, totally. So that's probably, like, I think that's probably one of my favourites in there. But there's so many. Like, the healing power of words. I just feel... with poetry, and I just think it's underrated. Mm-hmm. Really do.
I do as
but,
well.
Yeah, but in lockdown, I suppose, we were all in that headspace. You have to be moving at a particular pace. And like that, I forgot how much I loved it. Mm-hmm. My mom told me last night, I used to, like, she'd be peeling a carrot or a spud, and I'd come in and I'd say, Mom, can I just read my poem for you? Can I recite my poem for you? And she'd be like, go on. But that was me always. But then, of course, life takes over and you get busy. And then I guess lockdown gave us that time and that space. And the words of others, like, validate those big emotions. And in lockdown, we were all like, what is happening? The world's ending. What's going on? We're confused, angry, frustrated in lockdown, trying to juggle, blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. And yeah, picking up my poetry books, they were my therapy. Like, they
I
just
know.
Were.
And you were kind of in a similar situation to me in that you were kind of
away
isolated.
From family and all. Yeah.
But I was with my mom and dad, but my sisters were in Dublin and...
Yeah, I totally isolated. Yeah.
It was hard. I went from being around people all the time to being, like, alone a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
But. So, I mean, yeah, it's the healing power of words. And for me, like, now... they're my go-to. They're beside the bed every night. Like, and not necessarily my book, but yeah, please buy my book and keep it beside the bed. But no, everyone else's too. And it's just like different strokes for different meditation works for people, mindfulness, yoga, whatever it might be. But this for me is a moment of self-care in the day, you know.
Yeah. And what I love about that poem is it's like talking about your relationship at different stages as well.
Yeah,
I obviously haven't known that yet, but it makes me so excited.
Yeah,
you know,
the
just
future.
To,
I know. Yeah.
And I'm sure it makes you excited as well. For like you will have that like alone relationship with John again at some stage when all the girls are grown up.
Like, we're very much in the eye of the storm, and sometimes I feel like we're ships in the night. We're married 6 years tomorrow, and there's another poem in there, just to be beside you is enough. And sometimes, like, we can put all this pressure on relationships, you know, that we need to be doing X, Y, and Z. We need to be having a date night, and we need to be doing this, and we need to be, you know, we need to give ourselves, you know, 30 minutes every evening where we chat, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes it just doesn't happen. And you just kind of, you take it for granted. But that poem, just to be beside you, and yeah, it's nice to be reminded that actually just lying there and hearing each other breathe or whatever it might be, just waking up beside you might be dashing out
totally.
The door. But the presence alone is noted and appreciated. And yeah.
So what would people be surprised to find on your bookshelf?
I think I am. It's not for the want of trying, but I am just... so bad at cooking. Like, I have had so many casualties in the kitchen. They're in bad. I'm worse. Like, and I try, because when you have a family, like, you need to feed them. Like, you need to keep them alive. And I've been sent to every cookery school and course in the country. John is so funny. Like, he used to be really strategic about my birthday presents and Christmas presents. And I found this beautiful. It's a real experience. You're going to love it. Like, down in Ballymaloe or wherever it was. And you know, it's like a retreat.
My sister's got that for me for my birthday. It's just gone. I was like, is this a hint?
And it totally was. Like, he was like, I'll throw everything at this now in the hope that, you know, it'll sort out the problem. But I mean, I have shelves and shelves of cookbooks, and I put the time in, and it just does not come naturally to me.
Do you know what it is? It's like, you have to be so prepared with all the ingredients. Like, are you going to go, like, it's just, who has the time?
Even when I am, it's still, this waving of anxiety comes over me, and I mess it up at the final hurdle. Like, and I put the time, the effort, I get the right ingredients, I give myself, you know, and not all the time, but when I really commit to it. And I watch the videos on YouTube, and it just still doesn't work out. I end up chopping the top off my finger, or a pot like ends up getting stuck to the hob.
Oh.
Or like I've caused some damage in my mom and dad's kitchen down through the years. Once I think it cost them about $2,500. They needed to get a new hob, a new draining board that was one of those kind of plasticky draining boards. I put a hot Le Creuset pot, lovely pot. Stuck it to the draining board, put it down. It was so hot, it melted the drainer. The plastic from the draining board attached to the bottom of the pot. Then I panicked, put it back on the hob. It stuck to the hob. Tried to lift. The glass on the hob broke, stuck to the bottom.
Oh my God.
I don't know how many times the ambulance have been called, you know, with the bloody alarms, like everything. I mean,
God, that is so funny.
But I have shelves and shelves. You'd think when you came into our house, like, oh my God, you know, she must be like a real avid cook now.
So who does Christmas then?
Mom. And like, you see, I fell between a rock and a hard place. Mom is a brilliant cook, and just won't let any of it, and we all suffered as a result. She just won't let us into the kitchen. She's just a perfectionist, and loves it, and loves spending the time at it. And then John, obviously, like, you know, he did hotel management, and a big part of that course in Shannon is, you know, the catering side of things, and you, like, they all qualify as chefs. So he's a great cook, and now he's never around. He's always in the hotel, so he's never around. But like, certainly when we were like in the early stages of a relationship, he'd always produce the meals. So it just now I do the basics for the kids because they need to be kept alive.
Yes, but that's easy for kids because they eat quite basic things anyway.
Yeah,
I think.
But I'd love to. I see, like, Lily Forberg has these amazing like meals, and even the lunch boxes, like the color. And
like, lunch boxes in itself is another challenge. Like, I can barely feed myself. Genuinely,
I know, you have to be so organized night before. Like, oh, anyway, I have years of it up ahead. Years of it.
If you could take a leaf out of someone else's book, who would it be?
I'm going to say my dad, because he's so pragmatic. Mm. He sees the bigger picture. He seems to sail through life, and yeah, he's just a glass half full person. His positivity. I'm similar to him in a lot of ways. I try to adopt the positive approach to things. I don't look back, you see. I have a really bad memory. Even these podcasts, are, you know, when I'm just storytelling, I'm like, oh God,
I wish I
had a better memory. And the girls will say that. They're like, you don't. Like, were you just asleep for, you know, most of our childhood? I just can't remember. I look forward, you see. I think it's a coping mechanism.
Yeah.
And it's probably, a way to err on the side of positivity always, just to look forward. But dad is that way, and I don't know. I mean, he gives people time, and he seems to get it back tenfold. You know, very few people would have a bad word to say about dad, because he gives people. Even visiting my nana in the nursing home the other day, I was anxious about it, you know, just seeing her, like, you know, she's just hasn't been well. And like, I was just nervous about, you know, going in and seeing her there. And dad came with me, and just his way with elderly, his way with newborns and kids. And he's just a bundle of love. And mom is too. But dad is just, he's just a people's person, you know, a social butterfly. I'd love to be a bit more like that, and give people, invest in those relationships and give people the time. Of course, when you're so big, it's just hard. And I always kind of, I should be spending more time with people, because, you know, it won't be forever. But Dad is great at that.
Yeah, that's such a nice way to be. Yeah. And I think sometimes we get pulled. I think sometimes like you're busy, you have three kids,
I know. And I tell myself that, and then it's like, but when it's too late, you'll be crippled with guilt and you'll say, why didn't I carve it out? Why didn't I make the time? You know.
But like I look at my parents now that we're all kind of grown up and they're living their best life. My mom is like off traveling with her choir and Dad has his fishing and, they're still working, but imagine
they've
when
all
they're
this time.
They've so
I know.
Much time.
Mom and Dad are the same. The golf, I've lost them to the golf. Lost them. Four hours in the middle of the day, would be heaven.
Oh my God.
I know, but it's I think it's a retiree's gig for sure.
What are we like? We're like wishing time away. what do you know about life that can't be learned in books?
I think Mom used to always say, always let your conscience be your guide. And I think it's probably, it's Jiminy Cricket, Pinocchio, the song, always let your conscience be your guide. And I think if if you're led by that, you can't go too wrong, you know. Mom used to say it's nice to be important, but it's far more important to be nice.
Mm-hmm.
And, you meet people on the way up and on the way down. And I think, again, giving people time and letting your conscience guide you is probably, Mom has it's actually in there, a pamphlet almost that she lives by. It's Desiderata. And there's just so much common sense in there, and common sense, I don't think you can learn that in books.
No.
I think, you either have it or you don't. It's that street smart or book smart thing. Mom is, she's a great woman for the common sense and letting it prevail, I think it's probably, it's a good way to approach things.
Do you think your mom was ever nervous about you getting into this kind of an industry and being so public and everything?
Yeah, I think, I applied for primary school teaching. That would have been the safer option, but insane. And they wanted me to make sure it was down in the CAO, but I was offered actor training in Trinity, that course before I even sat the Leaving Cert. And so I knew I was going there before I even sat the first paper. And in fairness to them, of course primary teaching would have been the safer option. But they said, do whatever you will bounce out of the bed for in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I would. Look, I'm not doing it now and things have taken a new turn. But at the time, I literally, and it was 9 to 5. It wasn't like your typical college course where you have an hour here, a lecture there, and you've, coffees in between. It was fully, full committal, 9 to 5.
For how many years?
Monday to Friday, for 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And there was no let up. And then when you finished in the evening, you had to go and see play. So it was constant. But I loved every second. As I said, I was in a bubble.
Yeah.
So they were right. Do what makes you happy.
Do you think
ultimately
you'd ever go back to that?
Yeah, I never say never. And again, Dad, you're hanging up the boots for now. You're doing X or Y for now. Don't rule anything out and don't rule anything in. Just see how it goes. Play it by ear.
Yeah.
I think that's, probably a good approach to things.
I love that saying, the seasons of your life.
Yeah.
And I think when you have three kids, it probably would be really hard to be doing that.
Yeah.
Because as you said, you're on tour
Not ideal. It's the travelling. And I see people, peers do it all the time with families.
Wow, okay.
But I guess with John, he's very rooted in his career and where he is. And the idea of travelling, it just wouldn't work for us. A lot of my peers would have, partners that can, that are quite, movable.
Mm.
Yeah. Whereas John's just not. So for now with the girls, we are where we are. Who knows?
Worst places to be down in West Clare.
I love it. I
think it's
say.
Like the Almafi coast of Ireland when the sun is shining.
The sun shines, but there's plenty dull days.
I know. I'm lucky enough. Usually, the last couple of times I've been down there, it's been gorgeous.
God, and you really champion it. And
I only go down when it's sunny.
but
I'm heading down
it is
next weekend though.
Are you? Yeah,
I can't wait.
Isn't it lovely that you have it now that you can?
I know. Yeah,
retreat to, and it is it's a retreat when it's not full time. And
my parents are still in the middle of doing up the little house. They bought it in, they got it in July, so just in time for the heat wave.
Happy days for you guys.
Yeah, so they've built the bunk beds and the bunk beds that we had growing up, and excited for all those fun times to come.
Yeah.
But if you could only read one book for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, The Great Gatsby.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I love it. I don't know how many times I've read it. But it's almost otherworldly. It just it takes me away. It takes me away from reality. And
that's why we read, isn't it?
Yeah.
Escapism.
Yeah. It's the picture that paints, you know, and the descriptive language. And you just see all those beautiful dresses and feathers and the glamour. Yeah, yeah.
What era is
escapism?
That, 1920s?
The 20s. Yeah, yeah. And the music, you can almost hear it playing, yeah. You know, when you read it. Yeah, stunning.
I haven't read it now, but I've seen the movie.
Oh, yeah.
How do you think the movie compares?
Yeah, beautiful. Like, I mean, I look at Leonardo DiCaprio. Yeah. I need to... and actually, he does a great job. He's amazing. Yes. Like, he's amazing. But yeah, I mean, it's an invasion on the senses. You know, it kind of hits you in the face. The music, the vibrancy of it.
Yeah.
Read the book.
Yeah, I will. Actually, I'm going to add that to my list.
Yeah, do.
And what is your next chapter?
For me, like, at the moment, we're very much in the, you know, take each day as it comes. It's survival at the moment. You know, it's with three under four, it's just so busy. And, you know, with my business, Bio, we're 5 years in business now. And it's become, I suppose, my fourth child, you know, and with my partner, Sharon Conlon, there's parallels there, which is amazing because she has three kids as well under similar age, under four. And yeah, we get it. Like, when I'm having one of those shit show days, she's like, look, I pick up the slack, and vice versa. And it's great to have someone that kind of is on your wavelength. Mm-hmm. We don't know where we're going to be next year. Like, we were primarily in the live event space that ground to a halt. Now it's become more of a lifestyle brand. And if you had told me 5 years ago that, you know, we'd have our shop in Ennis and, you know, we'd be, you know, we'd still be doing the same thing. We've an autumn series kicking off on Sunday and people are still coming to BO and still love the messaging. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't believe it, to be honest, because it was something that happened just really organically. There was a wellness movement happening across the country, but we seemed to be kind of starved of it in the West at the time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, we need to champion women. We need to, you know, put women's issues on the stage, you know, give it the platform and talk about fertility and talk about women's health and talk about menopause and talk about all these things that just are kind of being brushed under the carpet a bit. And here we are 5 years later, still, you know, still doing it. Great. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know where we'll be, to be honest, but we're just kind of getting from A to B at the moment with the smallies as well. And yeah, I guess, look, I'm really proud of it, and while we can still kind of shine a light on women and women's issues, I'm going to keep doing it because it's brought me more joy, I'd say, than any acting job ever did. Wow. And the feedback, and to hear from people to say, you know, this has really changed my life. You know, the topics, I arrived, I didn't expect much. I didn't know what to think. Someone bought me the ticket. You know, I said, what am I getting myself in for? I left the kids. Can I afford to give up a day? And I'm so glad I did. And, you know, it really put things in perspective for me. I left that, you know, destructive relationship, or I walked away from that job that just wasn't serving me. Mm-hmm. And to hear from people like that, you know, you've left a lasting impression on their lives, it's amazing. You know, it really
isn't
is.
Isn't that funny how you train, work in an area, and then, you know, this something else could come along and you're like, I'm just going to take the risk and give it a go.
And here we are. Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much for joining today. I know you have a busy day, so I won't keep you any longer, but your book, Every Day is a Fresh Beginning, Meaningful Poems for Life, is on sale now.
Yes.
And it's amazing. I love it. I can't wait to read more of it. I'm going to bring it down to Sligo with me this weekend and just get stuck into it.
Thank you so much, Louise. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode of Open Book. I really hope you enjoyed Avian's chat. She is just so lovely, such a good storyteller, and her voice, the way she reads, I think we were just in awe of her. I really hope you get a chance to pick up her new book, because honestly, there's so many gorgeous poems in here. I picked it up the other day and could not put it down. Let me know what you think. Don't be afraid to email us, openbook@goloudnow.com. And if you can, if you want to, rate, share and follow. That's always appreciated. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week.